Hey everyone, welcome back to the Physician Syndicate podcast. I'm your host, Ronak, and today we're going to do a little bit of a deeper dive into Greg's story. I think it was such a great background on a way that a physician was able to leave his practice, go start a company, go successfully exit it. So I know we've chatted about his background in previous episodes, but on this episode, we just want to do a little bit of a double click, and I'm going to be interviewing Greg. So Greg, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thanks for having me, Ronak. It's going to be interesting talking about myself. Not a fan of it all the time, but we'll see how it goes.
I totally get that, but I think there's a lot to learn from your story. So yeah, let's just get started a little bit. So as we all know, you went to med school, you were going down the radiology path, and you and your wife decided to start a company together. So can you just give a little bit of context of like when in your medical education you were when you first started the company and why you decided to start it?
Yeah, so the idea for the company came about when I was a PGY3 resident. So basically after med school, for the physicians out there, you know exactly what I'm talking about, but for the non-physicians, basically 3 years after medical school, I was 3 years into my, I guess it was actually 2 years. So I think it was a PGY2. Hold on, let me think actually. So it was summer of 2020. Yeah, so it would have been the end of my PGY2, early into my PGY3 year. So basically halfway through the pandemic, end of my first year of radiology. So it gets confusing, right? So you're a PGY something, but you're also a R something. So I was an R1 PGY2. Yeah. So just into my residency, basically, that's kind of when we decided to start a company. I can go into a little bit about the story of kind of why, because I'm sure that's what we're eventually going to talk about. So basically, my wife and I, we had one daughter at the time. We have two now. We had moved down to South Philadelphia. We had bought a house at the end of our intern year. And with that house and with the daughter starting school for the first time, so this is pre-pandemic, we had new bills to pay for with really no good ways to pay for them. So, you know, school, I think, was costing like $1,300 a month, $1,400 a month, plus our new mortgage. And my wife was still, you know, kind of doing some consulting work for Barnes & Noble at the time. And I couldn't do anything extra clinically. So technically, legally, I couldn't do any moonlighting as a PGY2. So I needed to figure out how the hell do I make extra money in some way that doesn't involve me going to work in retail or something else like that, or driving an Uber. So what I did was I figured I have an MD, I have an MPH in biostatistics and epidemiology. What can I do with those two degrees and how can I monetize them? So ended up going on to Upwork, which is a freelancer marketplace, not necessarily for physicians, because my wife was using it at the time. And I was like, hey, I'll go on there. I'll market myself. I'll figure out if I can do certain types of projects. Again, I have the history of the biostatistics background. I had always helped people with like research projects to help them with their stats work. And so that's what I did. I went on there and, you know, put myself up for like $35 an hour or something like that, and started getting jobs slowly. I had no reviews, no ratings. So it was a little bit slow. But then started picking up and started getting more and more of these kind of one-off projects, and was doing, you know, biostatistics for somebody here, writing an article here, maybe a research article, like all of these different types of random things that any physician can do, and made quite a bit of money. So we ended up going from that $35 an hour to eventually, I think the top that I charged was $250 an hour. Within 6 months of actually starting on Upwork, and I went from no reviews to probably something like 20, 25 reviews, and had a really high rating from all those projects. And that's kind of what helped get this like snowball going, was getting those first positive ratings, similar to like when you start an Airbnb, right? The thing that you're worried about is ratings, because people are eventually going to see those in the reviews that you get from other people. So ended up doing that and made, I don't know, 40,000 or something like that in like a span of 6 months doing this part-time stuff. And that's kind of where the story goes, you know, kind of fork in the road, right? So we ended up going on a vacation. Again, this was like middle of the pandemic, so you really had to go somewhere super isolated. So we ended up going to a cabin in the northern part of Georgia, the state. And it's a long, long drive from Philadelphia. It's like a 12-hour drive or 11-hour drive. And on the way down, we were like, you know, we have this kind of nest egg that's just kind of sitting there. I think it was like maybe 10 or 15,000 at the time, trying to figure out what do we do with that? You know, should we invest it? Should we go buy an RV? Literally, that was one of the conversations we had was, should we buy an RV so we can go camp and do things outside in the middle of the pandemic? And then I was like, well, we're doing all of this work. Like, I'm doing all this work on Upwork, and there's jobs on there for physicians and things that physicians can do. Why isn't there a platform just for physicians to do this type of work? And at the time, we had done a little bit of research, you know, into that idea. And we realized that there's a lawyer platform, there's like PhD platforms, there's general platforms like Upwork, but there was no physician facing one that we could find. And at the time, I had no idea what it meant to actually build a startup. And so I actually called you, Ronak, and asked you for advice and some other people that I knew that had, you know, some amount of industry experience within startups, which I did not have. And that was kind of the decision point, right? It was like, we have this idea. It doesn't seem to exist right now. There's a lot of physicians that are looking for this type of work. And so that was kind of the thought is, can we put together a simple website similar to an Upwork and bring two sides of what we then knew was a marketplace, physicians and people that are looking for physicians? And that was the simple idea, right? It's not a novel concept. Upwork, it existed for a long time, and previously it was something else and they combined, but not a novel concept, just in a different kind of novel industry within the healthcare physician industry. So that was it. That was the idea, and then ultimately started it.
The thing I'm a little bit confused about, Greg, is that you were on the pathway to becoming a radiologist. My understanding is that radiologists make quite good compensation. So if you were, you know, worried about, you know, your housing payments and schooling for your daughter and things like that, why not just go into debt knowing that you're going to make a really good salary in the future? And why even go down this route of like doing the Upwork side of things, let alone starting a company and just focusing your extra time on becoming the best radiologist that you can? So that way you make a really high salary, let's say 5 years from when you were at that fork in the road.
Yeah. I mean, at the time we were in debt, so we already had kind of maxed out credit cards and stuff like that. So we needed to figure out something else that would help us kind of, we were living very much paycheck to paycheck, right? Like that's something we talked about. You know, we all went out last night, had a couple drinks up at the top of this building. We talked about, you know, previous times, right? When we very much lived paycheck to paycheck. There was a lot of lean times, right? So going into more debt wasn't really an option. I don't think we could have gotten another credit card. I don't think that would have worked. So we really had to figure out, how do we increase revenue coming through the door? Because there was no other kind of debt options for us. But no, I mean, that's true for people that, you know, don't have, you know, credit card debt and stuff like that is, yeah, sure, double down on your education. You could also wait a year until you could actually start to moonlight. Like that was around the corner. But for me, it wasn't really an option, right? You have a kid, you have a wife, you got to figure something out. And that was the option that we went with. And again, like thinking through the start of that company, never ever anticipated leaving medicine at all. Like that was never a thought with building this company. It was never, we're going to go sell it and I'm going to leave medicine. We thought maybe we would sell it one day, but that would be well after I finished my residency training. Because when you read most things about startups, it's like they don't sell for, you know, 5 to 10 years. We didn't anticipate selling it within 18 months, which is something we'll eventually get to. But for us, it really wasn't an option to just like be like, hey, we're going to go open another credit card and live paycheck to paycheck. It just was too difficult.
Interesting. So at that time period, it was you, your wife, and your daughter. And my understanding is all three of you have very deep software engineering background. So is the three of you coding day and night to build the initial product? Is that right?
That is completely wrong. So I have no technical background in terms of like software engineering or anything like that. I took one C++ class in undergrad at UCLA, and I think I got like a C+. Lauren actually does have a little bit of a coding background. So she worked at the forefront of ebooks when they first came out. And so she did a fair amount of like HTML work and other things like that. So she actually had a relatively basic understanding of a lot of coding, but no way she could have like actually put together a fully functional website. So, and no, our daughter is not a software engineer yet. Who knows what she'll end up doing, but Yet, exactly. Yeah. So for us, no, we had no technical background, really. Not a technical background in the way that you could just build a product within a few months by yourself. We didn't know about Bubble back then or any like the no code tools. So no technical background.
How did the initial product get built? Who built it?
Yeah, so what we did was when we decided, hey, we think there's a viable business, what should we do about it? We started looking around and basically thinking, are there development shops that we can work with that can help us build the initial product? We ultimately found a company, I don't remember what the name of the company was, but it was a dev shop that was based half in Texas, half in India. And they focused on auctions, basically like auction software. And so we thought, that's actually pretty close, because within the website, you're going to have to be able to kind of bid on different things. The problem is, like, it's kind of like a reverse auction. And so we needed the ability for both sides to negotiate. And so we ended up finding them and we're like, are you guys able to build something like this? Are you able to retrofit your software that you've built for other people into a working software for this type of business? They said they were able to. So we're like, great, we'll do it. I think the initial build ended up costing like $10,000 or $12,000, something like that, to get a website that could create profiles for people to host jobs on them, to connect to a Stripe page, basically to do all of the basic tenets of running a marketplace. So we were able to get that up with like $12,000. The problem with that is it didn't scale, right? So it was a very clunky, ugly website that is not something that you would be proud of. But again, going back to like some of the startup tenants, if you've ever listened to Reid Hoffman speak, if you put out your software and you're proud of that software, it probably means you launched too late. You should be embarrassed by the first version of the software that you put out. That means that you're launching fast and you're acting like a startup, right? You're putting something out there quickly. And so we got it out there. It was, again, very buggy, not beautiful, but it got traction, enough traction for us to be like, there's something here. So we got physicians to sign up by me going into Facebook groups and saying, hey, we built this website for physicians to find consulting opportunities. If you're interested, go sign up. And I think we got a couple hundred signups within the first week or two or something like that. And then what we did was basically said, okay, we're going to look at the specialties of those physicians that signed up and figure out what types of jobs can we get onto the platform. Because actually, the original history of us launching, we were focused on getting medical students and undergrad students onto the website to ask for help for like writing their personal statements and stuff like that. The problem is the tech ended up not launching at the appropriate time, because development of technology always takes longer than you think it's going to take. And we ended up missing the window for like both the undergraduates applying through AMCAS and then also the like med students applying through ERAS. It's like we missed both windows and we're like, well, I guess we're not going to do that as like our main kind of business, because I think originally our company name was FlipAdmit LLC. So many things wrong with that, right? It was an LLC, which means you're never going to get an investment from anybody. And it was basically like focused on the student piece of things, which is ultimately like not what we focused on with the company. But that was the launch history.
Two additional questions. First of all, you mentioned these Facebook groups. So I'm guessing the plan was not just, okay, we're going to build a two-sided platform like this, and both the physicians and the jobs are just going to magically show up on our product, right? So can you talk about like the sales process, how you actually got both sides of the market going? Like, what did you do? Like, how did you actually market and sell the company?
Yeah, so I think this is one of the first lessons that I learned as a founder, right? Is that just because you build something doesn't mean anybody's going to come use it without some kind of prompting or pushing or sales engineering. So, I remember when we originally launched it, we're like, we're going to have thousands of physicians sign up for this platform because it's so cool. And then it's going to be so easy to find people that need physicians. It's not an easy thing. So what we did, the strategy that we eventually took was, we will go out and actually talk to companies first. So with a marketplace, like, you need to figure out which side do you build up first. Do you build up the supply or do you build up the demand? So we ended up focusing on the demand side of things. So basically, could we bring in companies of any size and say, just post your job for free, not free for the physicians, but like, we won't charge you anything to have your job up on the platform. Just put it up there and then we'll see A, who is in our cohort already within the physicians that are on the platform. Then also basically within each of those meetings, I said, we'll use your job as a way to go recruit more doctors into it. So that was kind of the strategy we took was, can I get anybody to put a job up on this platform? And then the question became, can I then recruit physicians based on that job into the platform to go apply for that job? So there's a lot of hurdles that you have to jump through with something like that. So first, you have to find companies that have projects that they're interested in getting physician feedback on. They have to be kind of ready to actually take physicians on. And so a lot of times, you know, the meetings always went well, to be honest, with the sales piece. It was usually, we're not going to use this because we don't have a project right now in mind, or we're just not ready to talk to a physician about the product or whatever it is. But when we did get products up on the platform or projects up on the platform, then you have to go do the other aspect, right? Which is the recruitment piece of the physicians themselves. So we got early-ish stage medical device company that was in like the gastroenterology and colorectal space is like one of the first projects we got. It was a great, great project. It was basically like, we need 30 different gastroenterologists and colorectal surgeons to jump onto like 3 or 4 different Zoom calls. We're going to pay them well. And so that ended up being like one of the early jobs. But then the issue is, how do you get those gastroenterologists and colorectal surgeons into the platform to actually apply and take those positions? So once we are able to figure out there are companies interested in this type of thing, then the question became, how do you get the physicians in, which is not an easy thing, right? So, you know, I would post into these Facebook groups where sometimes they were allowed, sometimes they weren't, sometimes they were taken down. I got kicked out of some Facebook groups because I was way too active and people were like, you can't do this. And I'm like, well, it's just an opportunity for a physician to make extra money. Like, why do you care? But there are a lot of people, and if you're listening in those Facebook groups, you understand like a lot of times those admins do not let much go through. So what you're seeing is really like highly curated opportunities, which means they're probably making something on it themselves. And so I also use LinkedIn, right? So I would find any colorectal surgeon, any gastroenterologist that I think would fit the bill for what this company was looking for. And I would send a message and be like, hey, we have this company that's posting this job that here are the hours involved. Here's how much you would make. Are you interested? And that's kind of how we grew the platform. And it was really like a grind it out step-by-step process. It was not easy, especially, you know, working a full-time job and Lauren working contracting jobs plus raising our daughter. It was really like finding time in between all of the craziness of having a family to send LinkedIn messages, to get onto Zoom calls and stuff like that. So that's kind of how we grew it initially. And then it kind of started taking off from there. But it was not easy, I'll tell you that much.
Interesting. You leveraging Facebook groups and LinkedIn messages. Who knew that social media was so important? I wonder how you would have built this company before all the social networking is available. But regardless, can you maybe touch upon the fundraising side? So you did raise a little bit of capital. How'd you pull that off?
Yeah, so I think this was one of the other hard aspects of this. So we had a couple knocks against us as startup founders, right? So one of the main ones was, I'm a full-time doctor. You don't have much time to actually do this company, which is a fair statement. That one is definitely fair, right? So I was not the CEO. My wife was the CEO. But yeah, I mean, I was probably working 10 to 20 hours on the startup a week. And so that made it difficult to go out and raise traditional venture capital, right? So we would reach out to people. We talked with a lot of really big venture capital firms. They all liked the idea. They liked how much traction we had. But that was one of the issues. And then the other issue was a husband and wife team. That became quite the issue for a lot of people. They're like, well, what happens if you get a divorce? What happens if you split up? And I talked about this on a podcast that I just joined a couple weeks ago. It was like, that's what I felt was our superpower as a founding team. Like, you don't have, unless you're in like one of those hacker houses where you're actually living with your co-founders, that's what it was like for us, right? So every night when we were going to bed, we were talking about the company. We were going through people's documents to get them onto the website, onto the platform and verified. Like, all we were doing outside of me working my career job within interventional radiology and then coming home and Lauren raising our daughter and all that, like everything else was about the company. which is what you need to do as a startup, right? Like you need to kind of live, eat, breathe that company if you want to make it successful. So we ended up raising a very minimal amount of money, really all from angel investors. So I think the total that we raised was like $162,000 for the entire life of the business. And we didn't really start raising until we felt there was enough traction to actually go out and ask people for money. So we had revenue coming through the door. We had a working platform. So we weren't pre-product. We weren't pre-revenue. It was a small amount of revenue that was coming through the door because also as a marketplace, like you take a take rate. It's not like your margins are 80 or 90%. You're basically getting, you know, an average of, I think our take rate was like 17 or 18% when you consider everything, including like the Stripe fees. But we had enough that we felt like we could go out and raise a seed round because we didn't even know what a pre-seed was back then. And we really started with people that we knew in the industry, right? So we went to you. We went to one of our good friends, Joel and Evan, who are both startup, well, actually now both are in the startup world, but also active angel investors. And then also I went onto LinkedIn and just tried to find as many physicians as I possibly could that said physician and angel investor. And I was like, hey, here's our deck. Here's the traction we've had to date. Here are our ideas where the platform could go. Like I had a three-step process for eventually like what we would build out. And so, yeah, everybody basically passed on us from the venture capital side, except for a couple. The issue with those VC firms was they're East Coast VC firms. They're not Bay Area firms that are okay with like using safes and stuff like that. Like we had one Philadelphia-based venture capital firm that I think they're offering us $600,000. I think the valuation was fine. I think it was like a $5 or $6 million valuation, which is what we were raising the angel checks on. The big issue was they wanted warrants that lasted for 3 years. And basically they were like, we want the opportunity to be able to invest another $600K at the same valuation within the next 3 years. And we're like, no. So that was kind of where everything fell apart. We're like, we're not going to do the warrants. If you guys want to put $600K at the valuation, then that's fine. They ended up basically pulling the term sheet and we're like, okay, that kind of sucks. Cause we were like I was considering, I was like, should I take a year off from medicine? Cause this was before July 1st, which is the turnover of the academic calendar. And I was like, well, maybe I'll take a year off, run the company with Lauren with like a fresh $600K in the bank and figure out what we need to do to actually scale this. And it ended up being kind of the best thing for us, I think, not taking that. And then we also had a angel forum, angel syndicate, whatever you want to call it, also get really interested in the company. They ended up also throwing in a term sheet, but it was at like a $4 million valuation. And we're like, we've already raised it, I think, 5 and 6 at that point by taking safes. And we're like, I honestly don't think like our company deserves a $4 million valuation with how much revenue we had coming through the door. Like the multiple was weird. And we're like, yeah, if you're really stuck at 4 or 4.5, whatever it was, like we're just going to pass. And I think they were considering putting in 750 or something like that. It was a pretty big check. And that was July or June of 2021. So like a year after we had started the platform. And we also had the new tech coming out. So we had a new software platform that was 100% ours. Also, I guess the other company that we had worked with, the platform wasn't ours, right? So they owned pieces of it. And we're like, well, we need to be able to own 100% of it. So we ended up finding another dev shop in the Ukraine, which Lauren is still working with, who was great. They built the platform from the ground up. And I think it cost like $50,000 or something like that to actually do, or $60,000. Also probably the best decision we made. So yeah, we ended up turning down a couple different term sheets really because of the valuation, then also the warrants piece, which again ended up being the best possible situation for us because 2 months later, after we turned down that like $4.5 or $4 million valuation, we started getting into like the actual acquisition process. So that's when we've had that, that's when I had that first meeting with that investment banking firm where they mentioned acquisition. And I was like, holy crap, okay. Because had we done one of those deals, we would have given away, you know, 20, 25% of the company, which would change the dynamics of selling the business. So we ended up taking $162,000 from you, two of my good friends from high school that are in the startup world, and then a bunch of physicians. So I think we had 5 physician investors that probably put an average check size of $25K in.
Interesting. So let's wrap by talking about the acquisition. So Greg, my memory might be a little bit hazy here, so you can correct me where I'm wrong. Your cousin is an investment banker at Goldman Sachs, so they just basically took care of the entire sales process for you, right?
Entirely incorrect. Yeah, so the M&A process, we can talk about this. So I mentioned the investment banking company. So what that was actually a pitch for them to use our service. And it was a relatively big iBanking firm or whatever they're called. And they're like, oh yeah, they started asking really weird questions within like the last 10 minutes of our time. It was like a 30-minute call. And they're like, oh, what does revenue look like? What does growth rate look like? How many physicians do you guys have on the platform? Like all these questions. And I was like, why do you care about that? And then at the very end, with like the last 2 minutes in this meeting, they're like, yeah, we have a couple companies that are in like our portfolio that we work with that might be interested in acquiring your company. I was like, what? And like as a founder, that you're hoping eventually comes through someday that somebody wants to acquire whatever you've built. And they were basically like, yeah, we have a couple companies that might be interested. And I was like, yeah, you put me in touch with them. Like, I'm definitely going to interested in talking with them. I don't think I'll sell the company, like just playing it cool. Ended up getting into a call with the VP of Corp Dev at this company. I think it was like a staffing style company, like a general staffing company. And the person was like, yeah, we're super interested in acquiring this company. Like, let me talk to our CEO and like, I'll get back to you within a week. And I was like, okay. And that's when I was like, Lauren, we have to figure out how the hell do you do this? Because you don't want just one offer, right? You want to get multiple people interested in acquiring your company. So I ended up reaching out to 15 or 20 different companies that I ultimately thought could be a good landing place for the platform, anywhere from like public companies to private companies and everything in between. And I literally went onto LinkedIn and I found any corp dev person at those companies, figured out what their email was, sent them all emails and said, hey, we got acquisition interest a lot earlier than I ever anticipated. I just wanted to kind of run by the platform with you, see if you're interested. I sent them a deck. I think it was a client deck, not a pitch deck. And I was like, these are the things that we do. This is the numbers. This is attraction. I don't know how quickly this is going to go, but if you're interested, let's jump on a Zoom. And ended up talking to, of those like 15 or 20 companies, maybe 10 of them on an initial call. Again, anywhere from like big public companies or companies that were about to go public within the healthcare space, not within the healthcare space. Like we ended up talking to like Indeed.com. We talked to Doximity. We talked to a couple private companies. And we ended up having second meetings with like five of them and then ended up with like third, fourth, and fifth meetings with like three of them. And this was all going on from basically like September of 2021 all the way until November. So September, October, November. This was also when I was on interventional radiology, which is like your craziest time as a resident. And I remember telling my attending, the program coordinator was like, we're in talks to sell the business. I don't know what that means really yet, but I'll let you know as we get closer. And so we ended up having a day, I think it was like a Tuesday night in November before Thanksgiving, we ended up getting emailed term sheets basically to acquire the company from two different people within 3 hours of each other. We're like, holy crap. And so at that point, I went and did like a deep dive on YouTube, a deep dive in like Medium articles of like, how the hell do you play people off against each other? Like we have two companies interested in buying it. How do you negotiate with both of them to get the best price? Because that's all you're looking to do, right? Is like maximize your outcome and the outcome for your investors. That's all you have to do. And so we figured out how to do it. We basically leveraged both of them and were able to get a very good deal for where we were as a company. And we ended up getting almost 2x on the initial valuation of the company from having two offers. Had we not had two offers, there's no way we would have gotten the same deal. And then even the So we ended up going with GoodRx, the public company. That's public information, whatever. The private company came back and they were like, is there anything that we can do to sweeten it for you guys? And basically I was like, here's the number you would have to hit. And they're like, yeah, we can't do that. And I was like, okay. I mean, not much else to talk about at that point. So, but again, like as a founder, never thought we would doing like the M&A process 18 months in. And really 12 months in from actually, or 13 months in from actually incorporating correctly, which would have sucked also had we gotten short-term capital gains tax treatment on this. So yeah, I mean, that was the story of the M&A process. You know, people, the last podcast I went on to, that's another podcast, was like, did you guys use a banker to help you with the process? No, like you don't need to unless it's like a $1 billion transaction and you're looking to really like get every little bit out of it. Because they take 3, 4, 5% of the transaction price. Like that didn't seem worth it to me. And I thought we did a pretty good job and our lawyers did a really good job of negotiating with GoodRx lawyers. It was an interesting process and one that if you're a founder, hopefully you get to go through someday, whether that's an acquisition or get out into the public markets. Like it's a lot of fun.
Awesome. Thank you so much for sharing your story, Greg. I think this is really interesting stuff. I think this is very motivational for any sort of physician that's out there that's thinking about selling, or sorry, any physician that's thinking about starting their own company. Greg, you did this during residency. This is a very busy time in one's life, let alone being married and having a daughter. So, you know, kudos to you and Lauren for pulling all this stuff off. And hopefully this is just inspiration for other people to try doing something similar. So we'll end the episode here. Greg, you're always welcome back on the podcast as a guest or a host, whichever one you prefer. But thank you again for taking the time to share your story in a little bit more detail.
Of course. Thanks for having me on my own Riverside account. Booyah. See you next time on the Physician Syndicate podcast.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode. As always, we'd like to remind you that the information and opinions expressed on this podcast are for educational and entertainment purposes only, and should not be construed as financial or investment advice. Before making any investment decisions, we strongly recommend that you consult with your lawyer, tax professional, and financial planner. Keep in mind that investing in startups can be extremely risky, and there's a potential for loss of your entire investment. Remember to always conduct thorough research and consider your risk tolerance before making any financial decisions. Stay informed, and we look forward to having you join us on our next episode of the Physician Syndicate podcast.